Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
I'm Ron Elving.
Wait. And I'm Ken Reardon.
And you know what, Ken? It's the end of spring. This is the last podcast of the spring.
Right.
But just the beginning of summer. And you know how we can tell that?
Because you're a fan of the Four Seasons.
You're wearing your summer colors.
I am.
Pink and green.
As the late Natalie Friedman once said, I remind her of a watermelon.
But I think we have some more serious news to report on. And that would be that Barack Obama has become not only the first African-American nominated by a major party to be president of the United States, but also the first major party candidate
born in Hawaii
to opt out of public financing.
I know.
Okay, now wait a minute. This story is not a snore. This is important because the public financing system at one time, about 32 years ago, was created to save our republic.
And it was actually done to save the republic from the big spending Republicans.
Well, big spending politicians in either party. But
well,
of course,
they weren't.
Everyone assumed the Republicans would always have more money. And they always had.
George W. Bush broke the record in 2004. But
8 years later, we have entered a world in which asking people to give the maximum, which is now $2,300 for the primaries, same figure again for the general election, is no longer the most effective way to build up a huge campaign war chest.
Barack Obama has gotten small donors, about 3 feet tall, the dwarfs.
I don't think any of them is over 4 foot
tall. No.
1.5 million and counting and adding. And the question is, and I think this is a big question for this particular presidential election, will people continue to flock to Barack Obama now that he has officially said, well, let's let him put it in his own words and see if people are going to buy it.
It's not an easy decision, especially because I support a robust system of public financing of elections. But the public financing of presidential elections, as it exists today, is broken. And we face opponents who become masters at gaming this broken system.
Ken, does it work? Does he get away with saying the system is broken? I'm not reneging on my promise to stay within public financing?
Well, the system is broken, and we saw it in 2000 when George W. Bush opted out of the public finances during the primaries.
That's right. But he took the money in the fall from the public.
As everybody has. In 2004,
financed.
Democrats John Kerry and Howard Dean also opted out during the primaries, but Kerry and Bush took it.
Every candidate has, ever since 1976.
In the general election.
Yes.
Barack Obama, first of all, it's a Democrat doing it. It's unbelievable. But he can make the argument, Barack Obama can, that what's not, first of all, I'm saving the taxpayers $84 million.
Big deal.
I know, exactly. But he's getting $200 donations from, as you say, 1.5 million people. If you're Barack Obama, how do you not opt out of a system that's not working?
If you believe in the principle of public financing, you believe in the principle of public financing. He has always said that he did.
And Democrats
now
always do. Democrats always
three times, four times, five times as much money by going through the internet and his own private campaign fundraising system. And it's all legal. It's all his right. The contributions, as you say, are relatively small, and there are 1.5 million donors. That's a big group of people. But it's not public financing. And on principle, he is reneging on something that he said he would do.
And that's something that John McCain, who has been Mr. Campaign Finance Crusader, can throw that argument back at Barack Obama's face that he has flip-flopped. Now, John McCain has not flip-flopped on anything.
No, not ever. Except maybe drilling offshore on Florida.
Well, you know that famous Abraham Lincoln quote, offshore and 7 years ago.
My position was a little different. John McCain has for decades opposed drilling for oil offshore Florida, California. All of a sudden, $4, $5 a gallon gasoline, suddenly he thinks it's okay to drill in those environmentally sensitive places. What's changed?
What's changed? Well, exactly that. The price of gas is $4 approaching $5. I don't know if this, you know, for all the accusations about John McCain that he is flip-flopping positions to curry favor with the voters, I don't know what this buys him. This probably doesn't help him in Florida at all.
Not at all.
It's very interesting that Charlie Crist, the Republican governor of Florida, who just so happens is on John McCain's shortlist for vice president, also said that, well, maybe we should leave it up to the states. Maybe we should rethink the ban on offshore drilling.
That's a nice thing to do right at this particular moment if you're trying to make friends with John McCain and you're trying to, in fact, risk your standing with your own voters in order to make friends with John McCain.
Well, and he's not up until 2010, of course.
Of course. And also, he figures that if he becomes vice president, he won't have to worry about getting reelected in Florida. But he does seem to think that there is enough acceptance for offshore drilling in Florida now that he could get away with this and they could still win as a ticket if he were on the ticket with John McCain in November.
Polls do show that I think either people are just so aggravated and outraged by the climbing price of gas that many people, heretofore conservationists are now saying that, I don't know if it's a majority, they're now willing to consider anything that could lower the cost of gasoline. However, this may not do it. I mean, most people say that at best, the earliest we'll ever see kind of a change in lowering of gas prices is 2030, and that by not much.
2030. Imagine, I mean, who is worried about buying gasoline in 2030? I think the average American would tell you right now that if we're still using gasoline by 2030, and if we're still using it at the rate that we're using it, we're going to have impoverished ourselves. But that's not the question. The question is there anything that can be done about the price of gasoline in a much shorter time frame? So if all John McCain can say is let's drill off the coast of Florida, make all those people angry, and maybe we can knock a nickel off the price of a gallon in 2025 or 2030, that's not a compelling argument.
Right. So what do the Democrats come back with?
The Democrats come back with saying we have to use less oil, less gasoline.
How long have they been saying that? Jimmy Carter?
Here again, I would argue, yes, they have been saying it since Jimmy Carter.
Right.
But as these prices go up, in the same sense that it makes people reconsider offshore drilling or drilling in Alaska, it also makes them reconsider their own habits. I believe people are already doing this. SUVs are for sale. Priuses, you have to order. Anybody who has any kind of constraint suddenly has to say, do I need two cars? Do I want to commute using my own private vehicle anymore?
But don't we understand that the reason the price of gasoline is so high is because China, for example, has become a tremendous purchaser of oil around the world?
And that's one of the reasons that the gas price has gone up so quickly.
Right.
But the underlying reason is still U.S. demand. And both we and the Chinese, and throw in the Indians and a lot of other people as well, are going to have to use less oil in order to bring down the price in the short term. Because as soon as the market turns around and demand starts to shrink a little bit, watch those prices come down.
But do you think the Americans will practice what they Prius?
Okay, we got to get off all this serious stuff. Okay, campaign finance, oil and gas.
The future of our country.
But let's talk about something really important.
Patty Solis Doyle
used to work for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Now she's working for Barack Obama.
A traitor!
This is clearly a bridge between the two campaigns, a way of saying, hey, you used to work for Hillary Clinton as your campaign manager. Now you're welcome over on our side because we like Hillary so much.
Well, look, first of all, Barack Obama will be the Democratic nominee for president.
Okay, you heard it here first,
right?
Folks.
Okay, what I was trying to say is that when Hillary Clinton said that, look, I am behind Barack Obama 100%, he is the nominee and I will do everything I can to work for him. So it would make sense that the Obama campaign reaches out to Patty Solis Doyle, who did a great job of squandering the inevitability of Hillary Clinton and watching Barack Obama win 11 states in a row. And
you can't possibly be blaming her for decisions that were made by
Mark Penn. No, actually I'm not. But if
she was carrying out decisions that were made over her head,
yes,
and handed to her and which she objected to.
No, look, first of all, she's Chicago. She's a close friend of David Axelrod. I think it makes complete sense she will be, now that we should say this, we should say that she will be the chief of staff for the vice presidential nominee, whoever he or she may be. Look, I think it's a great pickup. I think it bridges the gap. First of all, she's Hispanic. She's smart.
She's a woman.
She's a woman.
All of these are groups, the people that Barack Obama needs.
Smart people?
In other hiring news, the spokesperson for John Kerry in 2004, who was that, Ken?
Stephanie Cutter.
Oh, very good. Yeah. She is going to be the press secretary now for somebody whose last name is Obama, but not Barack.
That would be Michelle Obama.
Yeah. And this week, Mrs. Obama appeared on a very popular program I know you watch every day called The View.
Well, I watched her on The View, and it was very interesting. The contrast, the stereotypes people are already doing between Cindy McCain, wife of presumptive Republican nominee John McCain, and Michelle Obama, who is tall, black, successful. But if you look at the criticisms of Michelle Obama, it's ridiculous. It's that she has an agenda. She's lecturing people. She's angry. I mean, it's just, and I think one of the reasons she went on The View was to try to tamp down that ridiculous image.
I'm going to throw out there the thought that a lot of people who constantly have to have new material to go after on the internet, on the blogs, on the talk shows, all over the place, on podcasts, have been shorn of their best source of material in the last couple, 3 weeks. I'm talking about Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And without those two people, they need somebody new to go after, and it has to be somebody who really, really provokes them. And even Barack Obama, with all that he represents, is not enough.
But why don't they go after the real issue that's out there?
I think they should, Ken.
Cindy McCain stealing the cookie recipes.
Well, I think Cindy McCain has got a lot of things to answer for.
Uh-huh.
She has a lot of money in her family.
Right.
Her father made a great deal of money distributing beer,
right,
which is a legal product, Ken.
That's right.
And made an extraordinary amount of money, and she won't release her tax returns. Exactly. What kind of questions does that raise in your mind, Ken?
None.
Okay. So we also want to talk about another African-American politician of some note and notoriety down in the state of Louisiana.
How's Bayou?
He has satisfied his remaining fan by announcing he is going to run for re-election. Who could we be talking about?
Congressman Bill Jefferson.
That's right. William Jefferson
from
New Orleans.
Right.
Under indictment for?
For having perhaps taking bribes from businessmen, trying to curry favor with businessmen. And the FBI allegedly found $90,000 in his freezer.
He was brokering some very large deals between businesses in Africa and businesses in the United States and being paid some fees, according to the allegation.
Well, we knew this before he was reelected, before he ran in 2006, and yet he was reelected.
So why not run for reelection?
And now
again,
he has an indictment over his head. This week, his sister was convicted of an unrelated transgression.
Which, of course, has nothing to do with his guilt or illness.
No, completely. But the whole thing, it seems to me that there is a whiff, shall we say, a whiff of corruption.
A whiff of corruption.
And yet he runs, and he runs with a straight face, and right now he's favored to win re-election. But this time he runs under an indictment, and for all the culture of corruption that we all know those evil Republicans are known for, maybe you think that the Democrats might be embarrassed to have a Bill Jefferson running.
Is the corruption issue in terms of congressional elections not fully turned around at this point? I mean, the Republicans have been out of power since 2006. All their big figures, those people like Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff, have all been indicted. The leadership has been decimated. And now, it seems to me, the Democrats being in the power position should be the people being scrutinized. And you have other Democratic officials also under a cloud, people being asked about their relationships with Countrywide Mortgage. Why did they get favorable treatment when they asked for
it? Ken Conrad and Chris Todd.
That's right. Ken Conrad from North Dakota, chairman of the Budget Committee, getting a good deal on an apartment building that he owned. And Chris Dodd, the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, getting a good deal on his home mortgage. It seems to me that the corruption issue could be turning around.
Right. And who's going to pay the price in November? Republicans. If you look at the Senate, if you look at the 35 Senate seats that are up,
23 of those
23
seats
are held by the Republicans.
Yeah.
And so we always talk about, you know, what Ken Conrad favors he may have gotten, what Chris Dodd may have gotten, and Bill Jefferson. And yet, if you look at the outlook for the Senate, certainly, and probably the House as well, the outlook looks like Democrats will make huge gains anywhere between 4 and 6 seats, at least.
In the Senate.
In the Senate.
And maybe double that in the House.
Well, we saw the special elections in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Illinois, 3 Republican, longtime Republican seats that have gone to the Democrats.
All right. I understand that all those numbers still favor the Democrats. But if there is a whiff, as you say, of corruption, why would it not attach more generally to the Democratic incumbents? I'll grant you that the 3 people we talked about don't have strong opposition or aren't on the ballot this year and don't really have big worries personally. But would not that corruption taint attach to Democrats generally since they're back in power?
Well, because I think if you ask anybody who is in power, I think you would hear the word Republicans. And I think as long as President Bush and the Republicans control the White House, they are seen as the party in power. And until that changes, until 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is under new occupation, that I think that the Republicans will be suffering the consequences. It may not be John McCain. McCain is probably the best Republican they can come up with.
Because he's the least Republican they can come up with.
And that's exactly why the Democrats are trying to make him the embodiment of the third Bush term, because they don't like this
independence.
But they will turn around and say, well, wait, if he's so independent, you know, he still supports the surge. He now supports drilling off the coast of Florida. He may be less independent, less straight-talking express than he was in 2000, or at least a year ago. So.
And he's, of course, playing into the Democrats' hands rather aggressively in recent weeks by working so hard to curry favor among his own most loyal Republican base. So as he is in this situation of needing to cross over and be the least Republican of the Republicans, he seems to be acting as though he wants to be the most Republican of Republicans.
So if John McCain is moving closer, if instead of moving away from President Bush, if that's an indication, if Barack Obama has unlimited amounts of money to spend, and not only on airways, but also in the states where Democrats have not won in decades, like the
North Carolina,
Virginia, Colorado, things like that. It's
a matter of money to a large degree.
Yeah. It's the first time in my memory that the Democrats have money to spend, so much money that they don't know even what to do with it. And Republicans, starting with John McCain, they don't know how they're going to compete financially, which I've never, ever said about Republican presidential candidate.
Definitely a first in my memory as well. And speaking of memories, a memorial service this week that many Washingtonians attended Many other Washingtonians and people around the country and the world could watch on MSNBC as that network said goodbye to their Washington bureau chief and longtime host of Meet the Press on NBC, Tim Russert.
You know, we weren't actually sure how we would deal with this in the podcast because, first of all, everything that's been said about Tim Russert has been said already. It's been almost a week since his shocking passing, and a lot of it has been personal. But you watch how much he loved politics and loved the game, and he came from the game. And the fact
that is, he had been a politician's staff member before he was
Daniel Patrick Moynihan
and Mario Cuomo.
And the fact that he just had such joy in it. And I really think that what's fascinating to me about this the most is that he embodies the two things that most Americans hate, and that's journalism and politics. And yet he made it so interesting and so personal and so easy to understand that losing him, it's so terrible for his family. It's terrible for Tim, who would have loved to have seen this campaign. But it's terrible for all of us who, for somebody who just made it so, he brought it into our lives without us having to spit it out.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Riding out tonight to case the promised land.